This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. Scott Simon is off this weekend. I'm John Idsty. That's the voice of Osama bin Laden speaking via audio tape Thursday on the Al Jazeera network. Mr. bin Laden directed his comments to the American people. He threatened more attacks on the U.S. and offered a kind of truce. NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore is with us. Hello, Dan.
Hi, John, and welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here. Dan, Osama bin Laden has not released any audio communications since December 2004. Is there any obvious reason why he chose now to resurface?
Well, I suppose, incidentally, it's interesting that the tape quality is not as good as on his previous broadcast. I don't know exactly what that means. But to answer your question as best I can, which is not very well indeed, I think that he needs to display himself to his own supporters in order to maintain his hold on his supporters. I think that he was speaking more to Al-Qaeda people than he was speaking to President Bush and company. And so when he says he's preparing a new attack on the United States, that may be meant to suggest to the Al-Qaeda people that he's still in business and they should still follow him. If that indicates there's some possible split among them, I don't know. That is only a matter of imagination.
How about the administration's reaction to Mr. bin Laden's threats and to his offer of a conditional truce?
Well, McClellan for the White House said that we don't negotiate with terrorists, we put them out of business. That's almost as good rhetoric as we're getting from Osama bin Laden. Of course we'll put them out of business if we can. The problem has been that we've not been able to find them to put them out of business. So on both sides, what you get from Osama bin Laden is the expectable, and what you get from the White House is equally expectable.
Mm-hmm. One unexpected development this week, French President Jacques Chirac stunned many in France and in the international community when he said that France could respond to a state-sponsored terror attack with nuclear weapons. He said his words were intended for regional powers and leaders of states who sponsored terrorism. Any more specifics?
No, he didn't offer more specifics. And the interesting thing is that President Chirac appears to be playing the same kind of rhetoric game that everybody else involved in this thing is playing. Of course, if you know who has sent a nuclear bomb against you, you would know what to do about it. And the French want to remind people that they have a nuclear force, their so-called force de frappe. But the question for them, as for everybody, is, yeah, you can do it if you can find them.
Mm-hmm. Moving along to the situation in Iran, France, along with Germany, Britain, and the United States, rejected a request from Tehran this week to renew talks on Iran's nuclear program. The standoff appears headed for the United Nations Security Council, which may entertain imposing sanctions. Are sanctions probable or wise at this point?
Oh, wise is somebody else's business. Probable? I think not. I think that what is happening here is that the United States, with its European partners, agrees they have to keep pressure on Iran, but I think they have also agreed that they don't want to rush into sanctions, in part because sanctions would be a great problem for some of the Western countries. Iran has just announced that it's pulling out $50 billion of assets from European banks in order to protect it against sanctions. That is a way of saying that Iran has ways of answering, including the fact that it has so much oil. So I think that what's going to happen is that the IAEA, the watchdog agency of the UN, is going to recommend to the Security Council that they take up the issue. They will take up the issue. They will undoubtedly have a very strong resolution telling Iran to get with it. And I don't think they are ready now, and for the immediate future at least, for going in for sanctions.
The big political news in Iraq this week, of course, the official results from the December election that were announced on Thursday. A coalition of Shiite parties won 128 of 275 parliament seats, which is just short of the 138 seats needed for a majority.
Yes, and that's a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Two Sunni groups will share the second largest block, 55 seats, and a group of Kurdish parties won 53 seats. With no one group claiming a majority, what happens next?
Well, I think that's probably a good thing, because if the Shiites had gotten an absolute majority, they'd be under pressure from their own followers to dominate the government. The fact that they don't have an absolute majority and do need to negotiate is a pretty good thing, because if they end up with a cabinet which includes a few Sunnis, enough to make them feel that they're not being left out of this, I think that improves the chances for their getting some kind of a coalition government out of this, which we would not have expected until now.
And the big political news in Washington this week is corruption. Democrats and Republicans unveiled separate proposals for changing congressional ethics rules to curb corruption. Both proposals include a ban on privately funded trips for congressmen and an increase in the amount of time allowed before an ex-lawmaker is allowed to lobby, increase from 1 year to 2 years. Are these reforms likely to satisfy the American people?
I don't think so. I think that the American public was willing to go along with the best Congress that money could buy for a long, long time. And I think now that you've begun to get some indictments against people and beginning to show that this criminality can go on in Congress, I think they're getting turned off. I think Americans also will want to know what is this business of earmarking that makes it possible to go in at the dead of night and slip your own amendment into a bill that nobody else has read. I think until recently, the Americans stood for a lot. I think they're not likely to stand for much more.
Finally, this week in Washington, President Bush and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez aggressively defended the president's decision to allow the National Security Agency to eavesdrop on Americans without a warrant. Senate hearings on the matter are scheduled to begin next month, and Attorney General Gonzalez has agreed to testify. Mr. Gonzalez circulated a 42-page defense of the program to members of Congress this week. What's the crux of the administration's argument, Dan?
Oh, the crux of it can be put in two words, and it's been put into too many words already. It is inherent power. It is the president, as commander-in-chief, inherently has a power that nobody can take away from him. And if he wants to wiretap, then he can wiretap. They also say that the resolution that Congress passed getting ready for the war in Iraq, when they said that they could use necessary force, they now define wiretapping as a form of force.
Thank you, Dan. Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
NPR News analyst Dan Shore.